Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi.
One of the things that's coming to mind, particularly this afternoon, is just the nature of the karma that we make. We have to reap the fruits of those actions or choices or decisions. It has an effect, and not a small effect, both for ourselves as well as for others. The image that Ajahn Chah uses is like of an ox cart. He said it's not that the wheels are so big, but the tracks that it leaves behind are really long. And using that as an image for karma and the fruits of karma, we might not think that the actions that we undertake or the speech that we engage in, those intentional volitions that underlie action, body, speech, and mind, you might think, well, that's not such a big deal, not a big thing, not so much. But the fruits of those actions play out over a long period of time, or can play out for a very long period of time, so that one needs to be very clear. And it works both ways, in the sense of both the wholesome actions and unwholesome actions. Wholesome karma, unwholesome karma. The fruits of that, when something is good, it can be really good. But when something is not good, it can be really, really painful, really complicated, really difficult. So that one needs to really be clear enough that one recognizes what one's actually doing. To a certain extent, the underlying reason for our committing ourselves to a spiritual path, a spiritual practice, in particular our practice of the Buddhist teachings, the ability to cultivate the foundations that lead to clarity and understanding, discernment, so that we can make skillful choices, wholesome choices. Because, of course, if we make those skillful choices, then they stay with us for a long period of time. And the effect that it has on others radiates outward in a really wholesome, skillful way. But say the opposite is also true. The unskillful or unwholesome choices that we make oftentimes lead to a sense of pain, suffering, confusion, complication for ourselves, but also for others. It's so important to have that clarity and discernment. Because it doesn't just involve ourselves, even if we think that. So that to be able to using the fundamental tools that the Buddha gives us, what comes to mind is just the not even thinking of the whole structure of the what Jinjeff translates as the wings to awakening, these factors of awakening, and in particular the aspect, the beginning aspects of it, mindfulness, investigation, wilya, which is energy, but it's also like a vitality, and bringing life into what we're doing, so that these are aspects of the foundations that lead to being awake rather than just kind of sleepwalking through life or going through life in a daze, so that commitment to awareness, commitment to mindfulness, commitment to attention, bringing attention to what we're experiencing, bringing attention to the moods and thoughts that we're experiencing, bringing attention to the actions and choices that we're making, so that there's that one's relating to the ourselves and the world around us with a foundation of attention, taking an interest, paying attention. Much of kind of the busyness that we get caught up in is a way to just not have to pay attention. It's sort of sometimes the busyness is almost it's like a satisfying excuse for not really paying attention. Even though it fills the time, but it doesn't really fill the heart. Whereas when we're mindful, alert, attentive, we can be busy or not be busy, but the heart is full. It's alert, it's present. So that cultivation of mindfulness, of attention, of alertness. As the Buddha describes mindfulness, it's not just a be here now from the 1960s. It's there's a discernment, there's a application of attention. There's a reflective quality to it. And certainly they say that, as I was saying, mindfulness, investigation, vitality or effort, energy, they're all of a piece. Because certainly when the Buddha describes mindfulness in the more formal way, Then there's the qualities of putting forth effort for the ending of alleviation of defilements, a clear comprehension, a fully alert presence, a willingness to pull back from the likes and dislikes that draw us into the world, so that and the nature of that kind of mindfulness, of wakefulness, it doesn't complicate things, it tends to simplify things. Say the mind of habit, the mind of that's drawn into the world, inevitably complicates things. There is no end to the stories. There is no end to the speculations. There is no end to the projections that we get caught in. If we look at things from a place of discernment and clarity, then it's just this arising and passing away. There's just this the tone of happiness and suffering. There's the reality of nothing belonging to us. We can't claim ownership over anything. And it's hard to make a story out of that, isn't it? When we look at the characteristics of things, when we see these simple truths, it's hard to make a story out of it. So we like our stories, so we'll disregard the a universal truth, universal characteristics, and we'll replace it with stories and stories of the kind of things of excitement, fascination, possible gratification, or it goes into the stories of, you know, defeat and difficulty and sense of loss and complication, so we get stuck in the stories. Just because there's a certain compelling quality to them, and there's a we somehow shy away from simplicity and you know, seeing things in a maybe more still and stark way. But the tools of that the Buddha gives us, the teachings that the Buddha gives us, are kind of like keys to the that open up. It's like Ajahn Chah used to talk about that as a as an image of the keys to meditation. The mindfulness, investigation, effort, vitality, reflection. These are the keys to meditation. In the same way that if we, you know, we can be in a, you know, in a cage, in a jail, in a locked room, and we expend all sorts of effort trying to get out, bemoaning our fate, but if we just had the key to the door, we could open it and just walk out. Because I'm thinking of Edward the Hamster. I'm still reading it. He's it's an existential hamster. The thing is even if we have a key, we have to know how to use it. I mean, because you have a key, you can even be inside a locked room, and you can use the key to scratch messages on the wall inside, and you know, write stories on the wall, scratch stories on the wall, and use it to just put it in the lock and walk out of the door, we can turn meditation and our spiritual practice into a whole other story. So that learning how to simplify, the nature of the mind that is overwhelmed by, tanha and avijja, desire and ignorance, a lack of understanding of the true nature of things, it just keeps complicating. Whereas even with mindfulness and discernment, one can the stories can turn into something quite simple. It's like they there's no end to the different scenarios and possibilities and stories. Coming back to something just okay, yeah. The roots of the things that complicate our mind is greed, hatred, delusion. How's it playing out? How's it working? What's the influence within the mind? What are the means of ameliorating and relinquishing? And so that lifting up lifting up of the practice, lifting up of the training, so that one's able to cultivate and rely on those qualities of that lead to awakening, mindfulness, investigation, vitality, paying attention to what the experience of feeling awake actually is. What's it feel like to wake up? What's it feel like to be overwhelmed, complicated? Because really paying attention to it, not in a way of identifying with it or picking it up as this is who I am, but and being able to feel, this is what it's like. It's like Ajahn Chah talks about, just you pick up something. What's it feel like? It's like picking up this bottle of water. Yeah, and it's okay for a while. And it might be useful to pour some water in and have a drink or whatever. But if you don't put it down, if you don't know how to put it down, if you don't see the see the drawback in hanging on to things, and then it just makes life clunky. It just makes it complicated. And I mean, having a it gets heavy after a while, as well as you can't really do it. I can't do anything with this hand now, because it's full of this. It's just got this bottle of water. That learning how to, it's like Ajahn Chah would say, you learn how to pick things up, but you learn how to put them down. You know, picking up what is useful, using it, and putting it down. Even picking up something that is painful or suffering, you pick it up in order to investigate it. Pick it up so that you can see it clearly, you can understand it. And once it's understood and seen clearly, you just want to put it down. It's too much of a burden to carry. It's too much of a burden to hang on to. So it's with our moods and our things we identify with, learning how to put them down. But they have to be seen first. They have to be understood. And that's why that's why we need to cultivate awareness and mindfulness. But it's also why we need to cultivate the qualities of generosity, of contentment, of gratitude, of virtue, of restraint. Because those are the again, when we're making choices, because each choice has an effect, a karmic effect. Those qualities, say, generosity, contentment, gratitude, virtue. Those are the kind of qualities that uplift the mind quite naturally. They uplift the mind. They make the heart resilient. It's different from resentment, kind of complaining, irritation, jealousy. Those don't make the heart solid. They don't make the heart resilient. It agitates just by their very nature. And that's what the Buddha points to. So like the nature of wholesome and unwholesome qualities, an unwholesome quality, unskillful quality, mental state, is inherently agitating, unstable, leading to dis-ease. Just in its very nature, those wholesome qualities buoy up the heart with stability, steadiness, brightness, and well-being. It's in its very nature. So we have to pay attention to the tone of the different mental states and qualities of heart that we're allowing our attention to be drawn to, and in what we cultivate and lift up into the heart. Because they have a different effect. They have a they have a karmic imprint that has its makes an impression in the present moment. It extends into time because it's the nature of karma. Action produces a result, and that result keeps moving. I mean, it's like that the image that Ajahn Chah gives of the wheel of the ox cart. Yeah, it's not all that big, but it keeps rolling. It keeps extending its result and consequence out from it all the time. So that as we develop our practice, is learning how to direct attention to the things that are both actions of body, speech, and mind that are facilitating these qualities of wakefulness and discernment, and that lays a foundation for well-being and peace, because that's really what is intrinsically satisfying to the heart, it's again sort of like the stories and the moods of the mind, of the heart, are many and varied, but what's really satisfying is something that is that simplicity of peace and well-being. That's what's really satisfying. So learning how to keep coming back and learning how to lay the foundations within ourselves, so that those choices are made not because we're thinking about it, not because we're controlling it, not because we're having to force it, but it's seen so clearly as what is our heart's desire, our in accord with our true nature, what is really inherently according to truth. So that's the structures that the Buddha gives us for the cultivation of the path, the cultivation of our training, recognizing that yes, it is training. Training ourselves in reflecting, investigating, understanding, and that's not a, how do you say, it's not an intellectual pursuit. It's a being willing to be present and to experience. What does it feel like? What is it like to, even if it's something that's painful, what's it like? Because usually what happens, even that, we run away from it. We don't want to feel it. But when we're not willing to really recognize, oh, well, I made these choices, I did this, and this is where it's got me. Because that's where we learn from it. We use it as training. Then we can make the choices and cultivate that which is going to really facilitate well-being and happiness. And then similarly, when one sees, one's experiences a sense of well-being, of ease, of of peace and say, well, you know, what choices did I make that brought that on? What choices did I make that really helped that to be present? And then, you know, one can be cultivating that, leaning in that direction, repeating that process, so that it's something that becomes second nature. So it's the spiritual path, or the following the teachings of the Buddha, it's not some kind of refined, mystical kind of way out there teaching. It's coming back to what do we experience? What do we feel? How does it work? And what do we really want? And learning from that, training with it. So that recognizing that the fruits of the Buddha's path are they're accessible. It's like when we do the chanting, it's sort of visible here and now, something that we can experience for ourselves. It's something we can experience here and now. It's a sandhittiko teaching. This is a tangible teaching that we can experience the fruits of. So take an interest, pay attention to how to simplify rather than complicate, and then one will end up when you realize this is a path that you can work with. To offer that for reflection this evening.
Under my